This is my a little talk to the Sangha that I gave on April Fool's Day yesterday, and learned today that I did something wrong with the recording, and there's nothing but silence. So I'm redoing it more or less today, but I'm still calling it my April Fool's Day podcast. And we move along now, week two of this lockdown or whatever people are calling it here in New York State, where we're not supposed to leave the house. I want to read a couple of things that students sent me by email. One of them is, "We are certainly in strange times. My emotions are all over the place, and it has been taking me some time to settle into the cushion. But as we get adjusted to this new schedule, it has become a little bit easier. I've noticed that even my dog has been a bit off. It may be that he is not accustomed to me being at home, and I'm wrecking his chi, or he feels the collective anxiety that we all do. Who knows?" At this point, I'm inclined to pause and offer a little of my own personal experience. This is something that I don't know if all Zen teachers and psychotherapists struggle with, the matter of self-disclosure. But somehow in this this very informal environment in my dining room, under these conditions, I find myself more inclined to share some of my own process with all this. Last week, a week ago, my first podcast that I did, I talked about my own feeling of being unsettled and unmoored, and the difficulty of adjusting to this. And I did so because I've gotten the impression from what I've heard of others that that's a pretty standard reaction to sheltering at home. Now just to reflect what this writer said, he or she, I can't remember, said it's become a little bit easier getting adjusted to this new schedule. And it's all the same for me. And I always suspect that whatever I'm going through is what everyone's going through, more or less, to one degree or another. Last week, it was a period of adjustment. And then, as time has gone on, as the days have passed, it seems that just by necessity, we adapt. It's not all uncharted waters. We're getting a little more familiar with the terrain of kind of a formlessness in our days, and the need to find some form, some structure to it. And so I hope others are finding, as I have, that I'm more consistent in my sitting. I'm sitting more than I was last week. It can be a little bit humbling to realize after spending my whole life embedded in a highly structured schedule with very regimented sitting, to find that doesn't come naturally to just transfer that to this home life. I hope that others too are finding that they're getting their footing now in this time, because we it's just beginning now, from what they all say. This is going to go on. So we need to find our footing and be able to carry on with daily practice, both the sitting and the active daily practice. Here's another one I got just yesterday from a very long-time member of the center who has been to many sesshins. He's actually a emergency room physician, experienced physician. And this is what he wrote. Hi, Roshi. Just got off the phone with my sister as we each begin the early ramp-up locally in our Midwest cities. So his sister is also a physician, and they know what we all know, that it's only going to get worse, especially in these other parts of the country, that is, who are behind New York State, for example, or Washington State, or who know that the curve is going to climb up before it settles down. So they're both beginning this, bracing themselves for what's to come. And then he writes, we both were reflecting the gratitude we feel toward the center. As my sister commented, I'm just so grateful I have that context in which to place this current situation. Now, that context, of course, she means practice. She's also been to sesshin. So hopefully she has a not just sesshin experience, but daily practice going for her. And that's how we can take this, that in sesshin especially, we are facing the edge of our capacity. We have to come to terms in sesshin when there's no way out, there's no fleeing. We have to come to terms with our limits. And how could that not serve these frontline medical professionals in the best way, to have gone through the fire of sesshin? At least she is grateful for it, and that's so gratifying to hear that. Sesshin is not just escaping into some ethereal realm that lasts a week and then we go back to business as usual. It's all, it's training. It's training for life. It's developing the resources that we all have, but mostly an undeveloped form at first, and developing those, refining those, so that we can find our way through the challenges of daily life. One of the little random thoughts that came to me this week was how I could ameliorate my natural tendencies to take risks. This has been right in my face the last couple, 3 weeks. Again, a little self-disclosure. I've always taken a certain delight in taking risks. I know that just from my perilous experiences in the past with jumping out of an airplane and smuggling drugs more than once into the country across, you know, international borders and a lot of other things. And so I as I examine myself in these last 2 or 3 weeks, my instinct is to just toss off these guidelines. My tendency, my propensity is to sort of scoff at how meticulously careful we have to be with hygiene, especially in public. And then it occurred to me, again, just this week, that if not, we don't need to do it for ourselves. That's sort of secondary. In this crisis, we have to do this for those who are on the front lines. They're the ones who are really under fire. Of course, the doctors and nurses and others in the hospitals, the first responders, EMT people. But then beyond that, the police, the fire department, the ambulance drivers. I just saw somewhere yesterday that something like 1,600 members of the NYPD, 1,600 New York police officers have tested positive for the virus. Either 1,600 or 1,200. Let's make it 1,200. 1,200's enough. Let that sink in. And then you hear the stories of these professionals having to work 12-hour shifts on and on, day after day. They're getting worn to the bone, and they don't even have proper equipment, protective equipment. How much longer can they do this? Well, my instinct, and I'm sure the instinct of many of you, is to want to help. What can we do to help? Well, guess what? We're not supposed to leave the house. So, with that in mind, how can we help? We can help by not leaving the house. I've made it kind of a mindfulness practice that when I find myself in any situation involving a contact point, for example, shopping, I do go out now and then to get some groceries, shopping, or any kind of deliveries that come to the door, mail, or when we're out, just opening a public door, when reaching for the door, to make a kind of visualization practice out of that. Visualize those who are pleading with us, those who are at greatest risk, to stay home, or to at least be exceedingly careful. Yesterday, I talked with one of our members in the Buffalo area who works as a drug and alcohol counselor. And he was getting a bit threadbare. He's required by the big health care organization that pays him. He and his colleagues are required to meet with their clients face to face. They know enough, of course, to stay 6 feet, at least 6 feet away from them. But these clients they're seeing are in rough shape through years, often years of drug and alcohol abuse. And they are in very compromised state. So more likely than a healthy person, especially a healthy young person, to be carrying the virus. But in order to get paid, this Zen Center member and his others, they have to go there and meet in this room with them without masks. They're not given masks. Okay, this is just more of the same that we read about and hear about of the hospitals. But on top of it, he has a one-year-old child, and he's not getting a lot of sleep at night. And that's another cause of lowered immunity. It really brings it home when you know someone personally. His cousin became the first one infected in Erie County, that's outside Buffalo, and his uncle was sent straight to the hospital when he tested positive. So I'm just sharing the fact that I have to work hard to be conscientious about these guidelines. I think I'm doing pretty well, better than I was 10 days ago. It's so simple. We're how can we help? Who would not want to help these people who are at such risk? Well, that's how, by being exceedingly, exceedingly careful in every kind of way. This same student of mine who wrote about he and his sister bracing themselves for the onslaught in their Midwestern cities, he then also sent me a great analogy of this matter of us protecting ourselves for others. This, let me read what he sent. This is from his sister, the other one, who had a coach in high school, I guess. And the coach related this incident, that he had been called upon to coach track and field. And this is, these are his own words. One of the early events was the boys' 4x100 meter rally. The 4x100 meter relay. As I watched them warm up, I thought they displayed some talent. The race started fine, but as it progressed, it was apparent they had spent little time on practicing their handoffs. Finally, the baton was dropped and they were disqualified from the race. I watched as they each drifted off to their other individual events. It seemed to me they lacked cohesiveness. They were running with each other, but not for each other. In the following weeks, we worked on two things, handoffs and trust. As both improved, the team formed a single identity that exuded confidence, knowing they carried the strength of four as one. They went on to place fifth at the state championships. And then this coach concludes, we are not able to run with each other right now, that is, in our isolation. We are not able to run with each other right now, but we can still run for each other as we train and feel the strength and trust of the entire team. The awareness grows that we're facing something, well, yes, I've been said it more than once, something that none of us has ever had to face before. It's a crisis, but it doesn't, for most of us who aren't in hospitals or driving ambulances or so forth, for most of us, the crisis is so vague. It's just a day-by-day kind of long-distance race toward where, toward what, who knows. But it reminded me of some words of the playwright Chekhov, Anton Chekhov, who said, any idiot can face a crisis. It's this day-to-day living that wears you out. Well, what about the crisis that is in its substance day-to-day living? There's nothing like this that any of us has really ever been through. Well, that's maybe a reckless statement. I guess people who have been with others, who've been looking after others long-term with severe medical problems, it's something. But there, at least, you're able to go out and bring in resources and meet with others, support groups or other things. This is unique in how isolating it is. And so we have this practice. We have this practice of overcoming our isolation in our zazen, in our silence. And when we are absorbed in the breath, the koan, or the whatever our practice is, when we are sitting beyond thought, where's the isolation? And then by extension in our daily lives, moving around the house, doing what we need to do, if we're not dwelling on our isolation and what we can't do, what we're not allowed to do, then where's the problem? Or the problem isn't as bad. I had to share with you a couple of other little kind of humorous things that came across one of my screens over the past few days. Someone sent me, my sister sent me a sign. Maybe it was just an online sign that said, "We can save the human race by lying in front of the TV and doing nothing. Let's not screw this up." Another guy sent another version of that, almost the same. He said, "Our parents and grandparents were called upon to fight World War II. We're being called upon to stay home and sit on our couches." All right. We don't have to settle for that as Zen students. We can try to do better than sit on our couches all day and into the evening. But it's so confounding. The most actively way we can help, pretty much, is to be inactive at home. That is, not inactive, but to not go out and get involved in things that could raise other people's risk as well as our own. Although one thing that one of our Sangha members is doing is sewing masks, makeshift masks. That's a wonderful thing. I'm going to wrap this up with a little anecdote here. Again, kind of personal. So we've been in quarantine now, my wife and me, for 1.5 weeks, and it's upsetting to me to see her standing at the living room window, gazing aimlessly into space with tears running down her cheeks. It breaks my heart to see her like this. I've thought very hard of how I can cheer her up. I've even considered letting her come inside, but rules are rules. And April Fools. Until next time, keep calm and carry on.